Daniela Hedwig has been studying animals in the far corners of the world for decades.
I started out as a behavioral biologist, so that's what I am by heart. My dissertation focused on gorillas.
She studied the way they communicated with one another.
And to me, studying vocal communication is really kind of like a window into the minds of the animals. I was really fascinated by figuring out what are they thinking? Why are they vocalizing? What do these calls mean?
And from there, she began audio recording to capture these gorilla sounds. This is a field of study known as bioacoustics. And when Daniela first started doing this, she did it in what may seem like today a very analog way.
But yeah, back then, I did most of my measurements on these calls by hand, and then I used cluster analysis very traditionally to define different types of calls.
She eventually found herself in the Central African Republic, where she didn't just study gorilla vocalizations, but also began recording the back and forth, the sort of conversations between elephants that also live there. They're known as the forest elephants.
Well, they're very elusive.
It's a relatively tiny elephant that lives in a very dense forest. So in order to actually capture their calls, it required teams of researchers to get into all-terrain vehicles and go deep into the forest to hang dozens of audio recorders high up in the trees to kind of eavesdrop on the elephants.
We can set up these units, several, many, many units over a large area, and we can get these data out every 4 months and then create heat maps maps that show the distribution of the forest elephants living in the dense rainforest.
And sometimes when Daniela and the team would get the data back home and start listening to the sounds of the forest, they'd hear something that made their hearts sink. The sound of gunfire. Daniela said she felt a little powerless because she could only hear what sounded like poachers in the forest months after they'd come and gone. What she wanted, what just about any conservationist will tell you they need, is to be able to monitor the animals in real time, so they can hear the telltale signs that indicate poachers are in the area and can catch them before they can do any harm. And for that, they would need to turn to the one thing everybody seems to be obsessed about these days.
Groundbreaking year for artificial intelligence.
And it's powered by artificial intelligence.
The artificial intelligence company.
Should we allow AI machines?
The future of AI.
I'm Dina Temple-Raston, and this is Click Here, a podcast about all things cyber and intelligence. We tell true stories about the people making and breaking our digital world. And today, a story about the holy grail of animal conservation, the ability to monitor their habitats in real time. We'll hear about fancy algorithms, super fast computer chips, and how AI tech types are trying to end an old struggle with some really new technology.
ChatGPT, AI machine,
satellite, engine ignition,
click here,
and liftoff.
Stay with us.
Hello, I'm Adam Fleming from the Global Story podcast from the BBC World Service. We are looking at Lina Khan, the face of the US government's battle to regulate big tech. She's already redefined the way we talk about monopolies. Now she's taking on the likes of Amazon and Meta. But who is she and will she win? The Global Story brings you fresh takes and smart perspectives from BBC journalists around the world. Find us wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Politics has never been stranger or more online, which is why the politics team at Wired is making a new show, Wired Politics Lab. It's all about how to navigate the endless stream of news and information and what to look out for. Each week on the show, we'll dig into far-right platforms, AI chatbots, influencer campaigns, and so much more. Wired Politics Lab launches Thursday, April 11th. Follow the show wherever you get your podcasts.
So there are a few things you probably need to know about the forest elephant. First, it plays a really big role in the rainforests of the Central African Republic.
When I started working in Central Africa, what really struck me was the first time I went into the rainforest, we started walking on these forest trails. And in my naive ways, I thought these are human-made paths until somebody told me that these are all elephant paths. These are paths that the elephants keep open through their foraging activities. They really like to eat fruit. They can swallow many of these seeds. They, you know, ingest these seeds and then disperse them.
You're almost like the farmers of the rainforest.
Yeah, they are ecological engineers.
But these engineers with trunks are endangered, even more threatened than other elephants around the world are. And one reason is that they have these tusks with a kind of pinkish tint. And their ivory is so prized, poachers target them. Adding to that threat is how much contact they've been having with humans outside the forest. Deforestation and climate change has been cutting into their food supply. So the forest elephants have adapted by leaving the forest to look for food elsewhere. And they're finding things to munch on in local farming communities, where they can often chew through a year's harvest in a matter of minutes, turning entire villages against the elephants, and sometimes turning villagers into poachers. So Daniela Hedwig knows so much about forest elephants because she's the director of the Elephant Listening Project. It's a program out of Cornell University that has been recording the forest elephants in the Central African Republic for 25 years. So they have reams and reams of really good data.
We are getting this really high-resolution, unique information about the illegal gun hunting and as well as the forest elephants themselves. So it is definitely.
But the ability to get real-time actionable intelligence out of those forest recordings, she says, has been impossible for three basic reasons. First, they need something called a detector algorithm to improve enough so it can reliably distinguish a gunshot from, say, a breaking branch.
So if we send out a ping, for instance, to our anti-poaching unit to tell them where poaching or gun hunting takes place, that we are 100% certain that the ping is actually a gunshot.
Second, they need to speed up the data pipeline. So when the detector hears a gunshot, it can send out a call for help right away.
In the remote areas where we are working, you do not have Wi-Fi coverage. You do not have cell phone coverage.
And lastly, they need to find a way to power all of this. And no, solar panels aren't the answer. They've tried that.
Solutions like solar panels, etc., sounds easy, but in the end, you're hanging this kind of hardware in the forest, right, with the wild animals.
This is Sako Wartz. He's one of the founders of something called Fruit Punch AI, which makes a habit of tackling hard problems like the ones Daniela wants to solve. It's one of those AI for good organizations.
Interesting example that we noticed, a setup that we did in South Africa, is that we had a solar panel there powering one of the setups, and then an elephant stomped the solar panels. Right, likely because it was annoyed by the glare of the solar panel or whatever it was, it deliberately went out of its way to stomp the solar panel.
This is why, despite all the technological advances we've seen in the past 10 years, real-time monitoring of wild animals has become such a holy grail, and why the Elephant Listening Project became so intriguing to Sako.
We're always looking for these types of challenges. So we were in contact with Daniela about, we saw this challenge of yours, the Elephant Listening Project.
He He offered to launch an AI for Forest Elephant Challenge, a kind of all-hands-on-deck 10-week sprint meant to tackle at least part of Daniela's elephant listening problem, how to set up the technology in the forest in a manageable way.
We've also started looking into how can we deploy this infrastructure in the field themselves. The current setup required rangers going out to all of these units and retrieving memory cards every 4 months, which is not doable and also not very helpful if you're trying to detect these poachers.
To do that, to have the algorithm run on hardware situated in the forest, they had to find a way to build an algorithm that was efficient, fast, and didn't need too much computing power to work. To do away with this need to extract audio cards and replace batteries so often.
So we also included in that first challenge, can we reduce these models to the size such that they can actually run in the field? And what type of hardware should we incorporate there?
Sako is from the Netherlands, and it turns out a Dutch semiconductor company called NXP had the hardware they needed, a kind of processor known as a system on a chip. They're in mobile phones and wearable computers. And what it does is pretty much what it sounds like. It integrates multiple components onto a single chip, which not only makes it smaller, but it means it consumes a lot less power. And finally, he tapped into what is essentially Fruit Punch AI's superpower, the AI community itself.
So we have a very large community of over 5,000 AI engineers worldwide, and we target some of those based on the expertise that we already know that they have.
And they pair them off with experts like Daniela, who have a problem they hope AI can solve. That way, everyone can learn from each other.
So if you're allowed in, then you get to work together with 50 individuals from all around the world over 10 weeks to solve the challenge.
10 weeks, that's it, no longer. Partly because Fruit Punch recruits engineers with day jobs, whose companies need to know their time commitment. And partly because...
it works a lot better if they have a strict amount of time that they are able to spend on it, instead of having a lingering project.
Right. Academics always need a deadline.
Yes, exactly.
Sako says typically organizations reach out to Fruit Punch AI for help. And his job as CTO is to evaluate the problem and decide what's in the realm of the possible. He's an AI whiz and a data scientist, so he has some idea of the generative models that are out there and how they might be applied to whatever problem they're trying to solve.
It's up to me and my colleagues to decide, hey, is this challenge feasible? Is the question that they're asking, is it even possible with the current state-of-the-art technology? Is there sufficient data? Is the data of high enough quality?
The Elephant Listening Project had plenty of that with its 25 years of high-quality recordings. And Sako and the team had the motivation. In fact, they had attempted something like this before in South Africa.
Here we collaborate with rangers in South Africa to have drones fly over the wildlife reserves at night using thermal cameras.
Data scientists working with Fruit Punch built algorithms designed to spot people who were in the wildlife parks at night.
That's not only very dangerous since there are wild animals there, but also they are most likely poachers, right? So we basically built technology that's able to detect these poachers on drones and then report back to the rangers so that they can intervene.
And is that a real-time thing?
Exactly.
But they ran into the problem Daniela had in the forests of the Central African Republic. There was no stable internet connection.
So we can't stream the video back to cloud or something and then process it there and then warn the rangers. So we had to build the algorithms in such a way that they can run on the drone themselves.
Which wouldn't be that hard, but for the fact that most algorithms needed a lot of computing power, and that requires a lot of battery.
When we use a lot of power inside the drone, that also means that the range of the drone gets reduced, right?
So the challenge changed.
We came up with a challenge where we specifically wanted to build a very small algorithm with a small computational footprint to run on top of the drone, which then can stream back the results of that analysis directly to the rangers, such that the delay is minimal for warning them about potential poacher sightings.
That's pretty cool. How is that working?
Yeah, so that's working quite well. The first wildlife reserve that this was deployed is Pilansberg National Park.
It's just outside of Johannesburg. And they deployed the drones at the end of 2020. And a year later,
there ended up being zero poachings in the year 2021. And this is, of course, not only due to our efforts there. There are a lot of people working on the ground there and trying to prevent poachers, but to a combination of our efforts, there were zero poachings in the park that year. And now it's being deployed to several other parks in the area.
So that's getting you closer to the holy grail of conservation, which is real-time monitoring.
Yeah, definitely.
When we come back, Fruit Punch AI's solution for Daniela and a real-time monitoring experiment that's already underway in Costa Rica. Stay with us.
Blockchain, NFTs, AI. What does this mean for you and me? I'm Sherelle Dorsey, host of the TED Tech Podcast, where we bring you the latest innovations and biggest ideas in tech. Tech is evolving fast, and it affects our lives, from the metaverse to the watches on our wrists. You'll learn why people in AI make good business partners, about our future self-driving robo-taxi, what the next generation of Siri, Alexa, Google looks like, and a lot more. Find TED Tech on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
Back in 2017, researchers at Google came out with this paper called Attention is All You Need, and it set off a revolution. Before this paper was introduced, AI usually used something called a recurrent neural network.
So how it used to work and doing so for decades is building analytics, audio analytics by hand. So by using your human intuition, and translating the signal that you see into a generalized thing that you can...
This human-driven model would feed the AI masses of data that humans asked it to train on. So if, for example, you wanted an algorithm to find every time Audrey Hepburn's voice appeared in that famous party scene from Breakfast at Tiffany's, you'd feed the AI lots of examples of her voice.
It's Rusty Trawler. Rusty Trawler. Happens to be the ninth richest man in America under 50.
And once it had learned her voice, it would go in search of her at that party. But this early AI method did that in a pretty inefficient way. Essentially, it had to look at every single sound and decide, Audrey or not Audrey? Not Audrey.
Yes.
Not Audrey.
Pick me up, and at the last minute I had Gil
Hong. Look!
Not Audrey either. To kind of rule them out. This process takes a lot of time and computing power, both of which Sacco and the team had already determined they didn't have. But there's a relatively new AI model that works a lot more efficiently. It's called a transformer. And if it was trying to find Audrey Hepburn, it wouldn't go through every single sound to find her. It would just learn the kinds of places you'd usually find Audrey and then look for her there. So it would give more weight to sounds that usually show up next to Audrey, and then start with those instead of ingesting everything. Essentially, it has become really skilled at considering context.
Timber!
So the algorithm is much more efficient.
You just give a lot of examples. So both real gunshots, but also breaking branches, car noises, dropping of glasses. You just gave him all these different types of sounds, but only when you give it gunshots, then you allow it to learn from that.
Meaning you have the network guess from all the sounds it's hearing, hey, is this a gunshot? And then you apply a kind of carrot and stick method.
And the moment that it says it is a gunshot while it has been the breaking of a branch, then you punish the network. And if it says it is a gunshot while it actually was a gunshot, then you promote the network.
And over time, the model learns the difference itself.
So I won't have to tell it what the difference is between a branch and a gunshot. I'll just give it several examples and make it learn by itself where the difference is.
Right. It decides what's important for it to know.
Yeah, it decides in itself. And even often it's very hard to determine why it thinks it is that way. This is what we call black box algorithm.
In other words, at some point, the AI isn't learning because you told it how to learn. It's learning in ways you can't even track. It's learning on its own. This revelation, the Transformer AI that came from a Google research paper, it's one of the things powering ChatGPT. And it's something AI couldn't do 5 years ago. Fortunately, the AI learning process for the Elephant Listening Project was relatively simple.
And the interesting thing actually is that detecting elephant sounds in and of itself is not that hard. So very relatively simple algorithms will be able to pick that up if you feed them enough data.
Like the Elephant Listening Project's decades of data, which meant they could pretty easily set up an algorithm to detect the elephants themselves and even the gunshots. The problem is, after the shots have been fired, the damage is often already done. So Sacco and the team started thinking about other things to look for, earlier warning signs.
We've come up with several solutions that can contribute to this. So one of those being that we also worked on detecting vehicle sounds, right? So approaching vehicles that shouldn't be there, those are also an indication of poachers before the poaching itself actually happened.
They also looked at ways the elephants themselves might provide an early warning, like if there were changes in their movements or migration patterns.
Microphones in the forest, we can listen to where the elephants are at a certain point in time. Using that tracking, we can also see like, hey, when they show abnormal migration patterns, this allows us to then activate the ranges as well. Like, hey, they're doing something weird. You might want to look into it.
They're hoping to test all of this in the Central African rainforest soon. They feel hopeful in part because they've seen other groups start to set up similar programs that appear to be working, like one with a group called the Rainforest Connection, which is doing bioacoustic monitoring in rainforests around the world.
So there is a lot being done in this field, and some of those solutions are converging.
One of the most promising experiments is going on in the southern part of Costa Rica, where they're trying to build safe corridors for the jaguar. Detection devices are doing a lot of the processing there on the ground right now. They've set up sensors or nodes that listen for something that sounds like a gunshot. Garth Payne is a professor of digital sound and interactive media at Arizona State University, and he was working with them on this project.
So once we have identified it as a gunshot at the node transmits information, which are the node number, like which node it actually is, the probability that it's a gunshot.
Based on the energy frequency the node alerted on.
And so those pieces of data can be sent directly to a Telegram account, which goes directly to the phones of the armed guards and rangers in that area. And so they can look at that and decide whether that's definitely a gun or not a gun.
And he says they're trying to develop a predictive algorithm that would also incorporate the likelihood that someone would be in that area, and then position ranger patrols to intercept them.
Already we feel that there's been some reduction in activity just because the guards are able to be positioned more accurately and to be in places where there's more gunshot activity more regularly. So that's a deterrent to poaching in those places.
But Sacco Ward says that even though there are promising results on individual projects like this, not everyone has gotten the word out about them.
I do know of a couple of projects that we worked on as well where real-time monitoring is already a thing, but a lot of people are actually working on it and they don't share their results that well, right? Because people are, for some reason, very isolated in this, which shouldn't be the case because a lot of these issues can be solved in a more general way.
That's why all of Fruit Punch AI's programs are open source, so anyone can learn or use what they've done. Sacco says he's working up another forest elephant challenge that might take place later this year. They want to add more data sets and look at other edge devices. And as for Daniela Hedwig, the director of the Elephant Listening Project, she says she's more hopeful than ever that real-time detection is coming.
this is an absolute game changer. I think within the next 5 years, we will definitely have a prototype or perhaps a really functional units installed in the forest already. Yeah, that will happen.
And if it does, it bodes well not just for the little forest elephant, but endangered species the world over. This is Click Here. Here are some of the top cyber and intelligence stories of the past week.
We are coming on the air with breaking news on the crypto front. Just moments ago, FTX founder Sam Bankman-Fried...
I will repeat that. Sam Bankman-Fried...
was sentenced to 25 years.
25 years.
25 years is what a judge has sentenced Sam Bankman-Fried to in prison.
Sam Bankman-Fried was sentenced to 25 years in prison on Thursday, putting a coda on a story that has upended the crypto industry. Bankman-Fried founded the cryptocurrency exchange FTX, and he was convicted of wire fraud, conspiracy, and money laundering back in November. Prosecutors accused him of stealing more than $10 billion from customers to finance political contributions and a luxurious lifestyle. The judge who sentenced him said Bankman-Fried had such an appetite for risk that, quote, this man will be in a position to do something very bad in the future, unquote. Bankman-Fried is expected to appeal his sentence. The New York Times reports that Israel is using facial recognition software to conduct massive surveillance of Palestinians in Gaza. According to anonymous sources in Israeli intelligence, the program was launched late last year after the October 7th attacks on Israel. The system is thought to use a combination of Google Photos, military checkpoint surveillance, and software from CoreSight, an Israeli facial recognition platform. Israel has used facial recognition in the West Bank and East Jerusalem in the past, but this appears to be the first time that there has been widespread use of it in Gaza. Also last week, the U.S. Department of Justice unsealed an indictment against seven Chinese hackers, charging them with conspiracy to commit computer intrusions and wire fraud. The hackers are allegedly part of Volt Typhoon, the Chinese state-sponsored hacking group that the U.S. recently accused of planting malware in networks of U.S. critical infrastructure. According to the DOJ, the defendants and their colleagues have sent more than 10,000 malicious emails since 2010. And finally,
a British court is delaying the extradition of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange to the U.S. Judges ruled
Assange. In London, WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange got another reprieve. His lawyers were able to convince the High Court not to extradite him to the U.S. on espionage charges until American authorities offer some sort of guarantee that he won't face the death penalty and will also be afforded the same First Amendment protections as U.S. citizens.
The High Court says the U.S. has 3 weeks to give assurances about what will happen to Assange. If that doesn't happen, he will be granted a new appeal in the U.K.
Assange faces espionage charges in connection with the Chelsea Manning leaks. Manning gave Assange thousands of secret documents related to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, which Assange later published. It was one of the largest leaks in U.S. history.
Today's episode was produced by Sean Powers, Kat Shuknecht, and me, Jade Abdul-Malik. It was edited by Karen Duffin, fact-checked by Darren Ankrum, and contains original music by Ben Livingston, with some other music from Blue Dot Sessions. Our staff writer is Lucas Riley, and our illustrator is Megan Goff. Click Here is a production of Recorded Future News. Tune in on Friday for Mic Drop, which features our favorite interview of the week, and we'll have a new episode of Click Here on Tuesday. See you then.
Looking for more of the cybersecurity and intelligence coverage you get on Click Here? Then check out our sister publication, The Record, from Recorded Future News. You'll get breaking cyber news from reporters in New York, Washington, London, and Kyiv, among others. And you'll see for yourself why it attracts hundreds of thousands of page views every month. Just go to therecord.media.